distributed databases. Anyone can look at them. Anyone can analyze the information if they have sufficient technical capabilities. So why aren't more people using this? Well, today I'm joined by Miguel Morel, who's the CEO and founder at Arkham Intelligence. We're going to talk about this very topic and a few others. Welcome back to Crypto Clarified. My name is Benjamin Dean. I'm Director of Digital Asset Strategy at WisdomTree. Before we kick things off, US listeners, wisdomtreeprime.com, check it out. Apple or Android app stores. Hit subscribe and share. You podcast listeners, I know you're listening. Subscribe, share, be nice to people, and you can find me on X, the Bird app, at Benjamin Dean. Before we begin, folks, I know, here it comes. James, Sam, and compliance, here's the disclaimer. Before I begin, I need to state the following to clarify the views and opinions expressed in the podcast of those of WisdomTree and Arkham Intelligence. And are subject to change. Anything we present in this podcast is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, nor as investment or tax advice. The information and opinions expressed in this podcast are not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation by selling securities, and rely upon them is the sole discretion of the listener. Please remember, past performance is no indication of future results. There we go. All right. We're going to Miguel. I hope you enjoy the interview.
Welcome to Crypto Clarified. It's nice to have you here.
Nice to meet you.
Now, we have people on the show who come up with interesting names for their companies. And Arkham Intelligence is definitely an interesting one. How did you come up with that? And how did you get into the space, right? Broad questions, but it's, you know, introductory thing.
Yeah, of course. So I actually entered the crypto space around 2016, 2017. So a couple cycles ago. And I essentially had this vision of wanting to come in and essentially, you know, try and build real products that people would actually use, especially at the time. Many people were mostly kind of either focusing on mining or buying and selling different cryptocurrencies, but there weren't that many actually interesting products and use cases. And so essentially my first project, I worked on a stablecoin. And then after that, I founded Arkham in 2020. And one of the founding kind of principles for what we wanted to do with Arkham was helping to uncover and understand and bring transparency to bad actors in the space. And so as a result, I felt like our company was a little bit, a little bit like Batman in the sense that, you know, wanting ultimately to do good and to bring bad actors to justice and be able to help the people, but maybe sometimes a little bit misunderstood, even when they're trying to do something good for the community. So that was actually the initial inspiration for the name as well.
Okay, that's a good one. I love founding stories and people who start businesses, or at least they're doing something right. So it's excellent. All right, let's talk about Arkham Intelligence then. I know, distributed database, anyone can have a look at it. And it's really a question of crunching data, structuring data, and then providing it in a intelligible way, right? So run people through that a little bit, because I followed the space for almost, well, eight years now. Network graphs, nodes, links. Run everyone through how you came up with it and what you've done with Arkham.
So I think initially when I first started the company, the first opportunity that I saw was that the schematics of blockchain, that being, you know, the way in which the technology is created and organized, is exactly as you described. It's distributed, it's decentralized, and more importantly, it's public. And so essentially what that meant was it felt like there was this whole kind of wealth of information and wealth of data that existed within the space that, you know, was probably not being utilized to its maximum capacity. And it seemed like nobody had actually gone through and done the homework of building a tool that would allow people to access and use this information to its maximum capacity. It also felt like whoever did that was going to build a really big company. And so I decided to go out and be the person who initiated that. And in terms of what we've decided to build, we've essentially built a powerful platform where users can go on and see all of this blockchain related information in a way that we kind of describe as more human readable or human friendly, right? You can kind of go and analyze raw blockchain data if you'd like, but it's just not that useful. Looking at addresses, sending money between one another, denominated in cryptocurrency, it's just not that useful of a tool, right? It's a lot easier to understand if you're looking at two people or two firms or an exchange in a trading firm sending money between one another, and it's denominated in USD, right? That's something that's a lot easier for a trader or an analyst or somebody who's attempting to do research to actually understand. And so that's one of the that's sort of one of the initial kind of use cases that we decided to build for Arcum, and we've done it by utilizing this public data to its maximum capacity, and then building, you know, really interesting UI and UX that's super helpful for people to be able to actually make sense of the information and the insights that we're providing from that publicly available information.
Got it. Understood. So, Miguel, tell me then, de-anonymizing blockchains is the catchphrase for Arcum, right? But we know that the blockchains are pseudonymous, right? So, how do you think about that? And I mean, it's kind of old school intelligence work, really, I think, but you could correct me. How do you think about it, given that it's, well, company you started and it's somewhat novel in like what you folks do?
Yeah, so I basically think that cryptocurrency as a whole actually has two parallel kind of narratives that exist in the ecosystem. The first is viewing the cryptocurrency world as pseudonymous. The second is viewing the world of blockchain as transparent. And both of these exist, both of these narratives and facts about cryptocurrency and about blockchains actually exist in parallel. It is both pseudonymous and at the same time very transparent and public. What we try to do at Arcum is essentially take these two pieces of information, the fact that blockchains are pseudonymous but at the same time very public, and you try to build bridge the gap in order to provide users value. In the sense that we utilize the nature of that transparency and that public information in order to take addresses that would otherwise be, you know, pseudonymous and with no knowledge of sort of who the entities behind these addresses are. And we uncover that information and then we provide it publicly for everyone to be able to use for the good of the industry. And so essentially what this looks like is taking all of this raw blockchain info, and then using its public nature and other sorts of information that we can find online, or using machine learning or AI, and then providing people with a platform where, you know, all of the addresses actually have some sort of entity or owner, so that people can actually understand what's going on chain, who's making which transfers and which investments, and therefore, you know, we can provide outsized value to the people who use our product.
So, all right, let's do a thought experiment, right? You've got North Korean hacker group, right? And they have done ransomware. So is it just a question of going and getting the address that the ransom's been paid to? Or is there like just an extra layer to it, which is maybe kind of behavioral pattern matching, that kind of thing? I'm interested. That's why I ask, because
No, of course.
go for it.
It's very circumstantial, right? I think that overall, it sort of depends on the circumstances. Obviously, sometimes there are more sort of key indicators than others. The way in which we actually handle this is we take in as much information as we possibly can that's publicly available, either on chain or otherwise. And we essentially use that info along with, thousands of other heuristics that have been generated by our intelligence team, by our data science team, AI, and so forth, in order to figure out, okay, what are the particular data points and pieces of information that would mean that an address is likely to belong to a particular entity. And so essentially, we then take all of this info, and in an automatic way, as you described, we do pattern match these addresses to their respective owners. Sometimes maybe it's that it's listed on a website, as you just described. Sometimes maybe it's connected to some other wallet. Sometimes maybe it is the funding address of, an NFT that's owned by a particular person or something like this. There's so many different variations and pieces of information that would seem to imply that somebody owns an address, that the best thing that you can do is, list all of them out, and then essentially make a tally of how many of those a particular address to entity mapping hits. And in an automatic way, in an automated way, go through and try to systematically process these to come up with good predictions that can then be analyzed by a human, of what addresses are likely to belong to which types of entities. And that's basically what we do as that's our bread and butter as a business, of how we're able to get all of this information and these labels.
You must spend a lot of time on tour.
Frankly, we focus less on the kind of regulatory and compliance angle than some other blockchain analytics companies. I think that some of the other ones are so government focused, like for example, Chainalysis or Elliptic or TRM Labs or something. And so those guys spend basically all of their time focusing on, these darknet markets and Tor and so forth. The interesting thing about Arcum is we've actually taken a different approach, which is more focused on markets and traders, right? And so instead of, servicing government entities or something like this, we're mostly focusing on serving, the broader kind of retail trader community. And these people are less interested in the kind of like addresses that are related to illegal activity and more interested in seeing, okay, what are the large market makers up to? What are the whales up to? What are, exchanges actually, doing with customer holdings and so forth. And so that's where we spend a bunch of our time, right? Lurking to try to understand the behavior of some of the largest traders and institutions in the cryptocurrency space. And we sort of leave all the other compliance related stuff to the other guys.
Cool. Okay, that's my mistake. Sorry. All right. So what is interesting then once one goes and looks at trading activity that's on chain? Because like a lot of the trading activity happens off chain in verticals, right? But
Yeah, definitely.
what is interesting out there at the moment? And I know it's an open question, and I know that like you can kind of run with it, like. But is there something
Absolutely.
interesting that's happening given the visibility you have, given distributed databases, open source, and anyone can check it out?
I think that the most interesting thing of the previous, let's say, year to date here in 2024, has been people looking at the ETF in and outflows. One, because of the new creations of ETFs, meaning new inflows into the cryptocurrency space. But two, people also wanting to analyze the outflows of, for example, Grayscale, right? So these are entities that hold, these are trusts. That hold and have held for a long time a significant amount of Bitcoin. And so tracking the outflows of these institutions, I think there are many traders who believe it can be a basic predictor for price, essentially, right? So if you're able to see the amount of outflow that's coming out from these large entities and institutions and how much they're actually sending to exchanges and so forth. You can basically predict the amount of selling that's going to hit the order book, and you sort of compare and contrast that with previous days, and you can make an assumption about whether today is more likely to be a down day than the last one, right? And so I think that has been the most interesting piece of information that people have analyze over the past couple of months. In addition, we have, provided additional kinds of wallets and addresses, for example, those of Tesla and SpaceX. These are large famous entities where when there are announcements about people buying or these sorts of entities buying or selling, many people find it super interesting, and it tends to be a kind of market moving event. And so when we uncover wallets like that, people tend to make a big hubbub. And it's very interesting for a lot of our users. So we try to do that as much as we possibly can. But I would say those are some of the largest types of analysis or activity that people have been interested in over the past couple months.
Do they tend to have multiple wallets? And I ask because, like, MicroStrategy, right? Michael Saylor's like, I'm buying more Bitcoin. That's what I'm doing, right? And I'm not selling it to you. Like, is that kind of one of these ones where it's a bit tricky because they fragment the wallet? They don't fragment the wallets. They have multiple wallets, right? And so you kind of have to monitor, as you say, the in and outflows, the buying, selling, signing transactions on the database. Is that what you see, or is it really just like, here's the wallet?
Yeah, I think that the
My wallet.
overwhelming majority of no, of course. I think that the overwhelming majority of entities that we have on the platform, they're not just a simple wallet. It's not as easy as like, okay, yeah, like there, here's this entity, they own 1,000 Bitcoin, and all of that Bitcoin happens to be in a single address. It's basically never like that. Most of the time, it is actually broken up into many different wallets, and not just necessarily for privacy purposes, right? People just do it logistically as well. Maybe every time they receive a new deposit or transaction, they generate a new address. Or perhaps for security reasons, they don't want to leave too much in a single, wallet with the same private key or something like this.
Can't
And so they'll
ensure
tend to shard it or to split it up or something like this. And so I would say, especially for the larger the entity and the larger the holder, the more likely it is that there are going to be a ton of addresses within that entity rather than a single one. It tends to be a lot of the smaller fish who will, just have one or two addresses or something, and that's where the majority of the coins are held. But a lot of the, to answer your question directly, a lot of these kind of larger ones, such as MicroStrategy or Grayscale, in some cases they can have thousands of wallets that are actually holding their coins, and so that's our job then to essentially using machine learning, make an attempt at finding which wallets belong to the same person or belong to the same kind of group of bitcoins or something, compared to looking at them all individually.
Okay, that's interesting. Now, we've talked a lot about Bitcoin. How does it kind of expand out then? We know the Ethereum network has reached escape velocity, is the way one person termed it to me. The Solana network has survived, and there's a lot of activity happening on the Solana network, more than there was, I should say, is a better way to put it. How then do you like think about that or monitor that? Because it almost becomes like something out of a Marvel movie with like a multiverse. You've got all these databases and all of these different people doing different things, and like that's a tough challenge to kind of overcome. Now, what I mean is you could probably train a lot. It's not a large language model, but you could train something to like pattern match, identify things that look like things which are interesting. But as the number of networks expands, and there's the number of users of said networks expands, like how do you keep on top of that? It's interesting to
Yeah, so we started out with Ethereum. When we first founded the Arkham platform, the initial blockchain that we worked on was the Ethereum network. Now we've expanded to 10 plus chains, and so we have slowly tried to branch out beyond just Ethereum to then adding things like other EVMs to then adding non-EVM chains such as Bitcoin, because all of these different networks and protocols have their own communities, and each one of those communities is very interested on what's going on their particular blockchain or their particular protocol that they are interested in. And so as we continue to add support for new chains, we're able to gather more users and build our community as well, right? We don't just want to be an Ethereum focused product. We want to be a crypto focused product. And crypto means different things for different people. As you mentioned, some people are only into Bitcoin, some people are only into Ether, and others are just completely, focused on Solana. And so what we've managed to do is essentially come up with similar processes for different kinds of technical protocols. Obviously, the analysis of Ethereum is going to be different from the analysis that you can do on the Bitcoin blockchain. And our job as data scientists, engineers, and people trying to build a platform like Arcum is figuring out what are the similarities and differences between these blockchains. But ultimately, how can we provide the same product? How can all of this live under the same platform, under the same UI/UX, when there are so many things on the back end, and with the data structure of these different blockchains that are so different? And that's one of the reasons why, it took us several years before we actually launched on Arcum, right? The company was founded in 2020, but we hadn't actually launched the product itself into beta until August of 2022. And that took a very long time from an engineering perspective to figure out, okay, how can we build a single platform rather than just a block explorer, right? Traditionally, the way this is done is you will have a block explorer for every different chain. You'll have an Etherscan, you'll have like a Logchain.com or a Tron scan or something like this. But it doesn't all live under the same hood. It doesn't all live with the same engineering team. And so when we first got started, one of our main goals and priorities was figuring out, okay, how can we have all of this live underneath the same product while at the same time, providing an amazing service across all of these different blockchains. So that was a major challenge for us, but thankfully we were able to accomplish it.
Now, let's talk Tornado Cash, right? So Tornado Cash sanctions its software. So you can sanction software, apparently. Does this, like, we know mixers exist and we know who use them, right? Does that kind of, when you folks sit down and look at this, and look, I know you've said, like, we're more interested in the trading thing, not the compliance thing. No. But what I'm trying to get at is obfuscation on chain, and I'm using Tornado Cash. We know who uses that. But doesn't that, in terms of like, if you're interested in the trading and who's doing what, doesn't that obfuscate things and make it difficult to understand what is happening on chain, inverted commas? And we don't even have to talk about the off-chain stuff, right? I'm just interested to know what you think about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that with Tornado Cash in particular, or some of the other kind of privacy protocols, my view has always been that, people who are looking for those sorts of services will always seek them out and attempt to use them. But the good thing is that the overwhelming majority of people don't use these services. They instead use other kinds of cryptocurrency protocols that don't necessarily have this. I think that the way of cryptocurrency will go the general direction of the internet, which is the majority of the activity ends up happening on kind of like this very under real name, ClearNet and sort of surface level internet. Yes, there are people who go out and they try to use services like Tor. Or other sorts of things in order to try and obfuscate their activity. And there is obviously demand for that. But at the same time, by orders of magnitude, the overwhelming majority of internet activity is not done in this way. I think cryptocurrency is very similar and will be, in that same fashion as it continues to grow and progress over the years, where the majority of activity will not be done with these privacy protocols or mixers or, other sorts of things. However, I do think that, as more and more of this software becomes available and decentralized, it'll be harder to shut down. And more importantly, there will be more people who have demand for those kinds of services. So From the perspective of Arkham, we don't really track or follow them very closely. I don't even think we don't even have programs internally to try to uncover stuff from privacy protocols or from mixers or something like this. But in general, it makes up such a small fraction of the cryptocurrency industry's transactions and activity that it just hasn't been super relevant for us as a business. And so I think we can maybe leave that to some of the other blockchain analytics companies. But as a whole, my view is these services will continue to exist. There will be organic demand for them in the same way there is organic demand for obfuscation technology in the traditional internet sense. But the overall percentage of activity and of volume and trading that occurs using this stuff is going to be very low compared to the overall rest of the market, which is what we focus on analyzing.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. Exactly. Easy to focus on the 0.3% rather than the 99.7% activity. And as things change, yeah, it's of course the ratio changes, but also the magnitude changes, right? Nice. So we're coming up close on time now. Usually, we finish these episodes by thinking a bit about the future, which is to say, what's interesting to smart people who work on difficult problems, like you both said. What's on your mind? What do you think is interesting for the listener's sake? It could be in the crypto space, it could be broader. You've already mentioned machine learning, large language models, things like that. What's got your curiosity, I guess one could say.
I think given the kind of company and platform that we're running, the thing that's most interesting to me is always figuring out what are going to be the ways in which people use data and information to make trades and decision making in crypto. I think initially with this sort of trading and investment, I think we've gone through several evolutions of people using trading information to make decisions in the market. The first is kind of fundamental analysis, right? It's the analysis of cash flows, revenue, burn, executive team, all of these kind of fundamental principles of a business in order to make a decision about whether or not you think it's overvalued or overvalued. I think there was a second paradigm in addition to this, which is technical analysis, right? The rise of companies like TradingView and very similar tools that allow you to, paint lines on a chart and actually, see the way and formations in which things are going up and down, and then using that to predict if prices will move in a particular direction in the future. Obviously, technical analysis is super popular in the crypto space. People love taking screenshots of charts and then plotting out if they think it's going to go up or down. I think that there's a fundamentally new paradigm that is being created right now, spearheaded by companies like Arkham for on-chain analysis, right? This is a new way of looking at the market and a new kind of information that exists for people to understand what's going on with these market dynamics, built by the premises of blockchain. Without the premises of blockchain, you wouldn't be able to do on-chain analysis. It's literally in the name, right? You can't do on-chain analysis on the stock market. But because of this new blockchain technology, you're able to get substantially more information about what's going on with market activity. And so, I guess the thing I'm most interested in is number one, how will on-chain analysis and the on-chain analytics market develop over time? What sorts of new kinds of insights will we be able to provide, or will the industry be able to provide users in order to have them take better action and make better decisions? And even more importantly, we're kind of pushing it out, 5 or 10 years. What will be the new paradigm after on-chain analysis? So you will have fundamental analysis, technical analysis, on-chain analysis. What comes next? What's going to be the next thing that allows people to get alpha and perform risk management in the market if you kind of take it out even further into the future? So I think those are the things that I'm mostly thinking about today.
Got it. It's pattern matching. Very interesting. Pattern matching network analysis.
Absolutely.
There you go. This is the stuff that AI researchers were doing in the 1970s. It's only been 50 plus years, right?
Absolutely.
There it is. Nice one. So, Miguel, how can people find you on the interwebs?
Well, you can find us at Arkham Intel on Twitter. You can find our platform at arkhamintelligence.com. On Twitter, I'm Real Miguel Morel, so I would suggest that people can look at our Twitter and our website for additional updates and information about everything going on with our company and with our product.
Excellent. Miguel, it's very kind of you to take the time to chat with me today,
Thank you, Benjamin.
and to share your thoughts. No, my thanks to you. Thank you very much. And we'll call it a day right there.
Thank you, Ben. There you go, folks. Miguel Morel, CEO and founder at Arkham Intelligence. I hope you enjoyed the show. US listeners, WisdomTreePrime.com, Apple, Android App Store. Check it out. You won't be disappointed. You can always find me on X, the Bird app, at Benjamin Dean. Thank you for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to do this, and I look forward to seeing you again next time.